civilian and military relations. Southern Command has a long history of turnouts to offer assistance to civilians in need. Their ethic might almost be described by the words, protect and serve. Bases always serve as a temporary haven for the lost, dispossessed, or desperate. The men and women in uniform know they depend on the civilian populace for food and support. There are endless tales of whole camps going hungry to share their rations with hard-up locals and their children. In return, civilians do what they can to provide for soldiers on the march, act as spare pairs of eyes and ears, and put in extra hours as poorly paid labor levies, doing everything from laundry to garbage burial. Especially in frontier areas, the soldiers are the only law and order around. While they can't treat criminals as combatants, they do have the power to hold someone until they can be turned over to civilian authorities, and the farther out the base, the longer the wait for a marshal or judge riding circuit to appear. More important for this period in the turbulent history of the Middle Free States, they can provide escort for vehicles, trains, and watercraft. For all Valentine's reluctance to join Mrs. Okum's famous and tragic trek to recover her son, the rest of Fort Sing worked like demons to prepare her group and vehicles for their journey. Home by Christmas, the men said to one another, hoping that 10 days on the road would suffice to recover the men Javelin had left scattered across Kentucky. Each soldier could picture himself left behind somewhere. They provisioned and checked and armed the already well-equipped vehicles. For the average man in the ranks, letters from the president and connections in the general headquarters staff were remote facts, like the hooked OC straddling much of southern Oklahoma and northern Texas. What they understood was that the cots bolted to the inside of the trucks and vehicles would bring home those who'd been left behind, at least those who survived their injuries and the sweeps of Javelin's trail by bloodthirsty moondaggers. Valentine met Okum's team on a warm December day. He hadn't seen vehicles like these since the drive on Dallas, and these specimens were in much better condition. They sat there, not exactly gleaming in the sun, but looking formidable in their grit and mud streaks. Mrs. Okum introduced him to her right-hand man, an ex-bear named Stuck. Valentine hadn't met many ex-bears. It seemed you were either a bear or you were a deceased bear. The ex-bears he'd met were all so badly damaged they couldn't stand up or hold a gun. Stuck had all his arms and legs and sensory organs intact. All that seemed to be missing was the bristly, grouchy bear attitude. He was a big, meaty, soft-spoken man with a wide, angular mustache. Stuck took Valentine down the line. He introduced Valentine to the wagon master, Habanero, a tough, older man, thin and dry and leathery as a piece of jerky. He had a combination hearing aid radio communicator that he used to issue orders to the drivers in the column.
Habanero was ex-artillery in the Guards. Used to haul around guns, deaf as a post, but knows engines and suspensions and transmissions. Well, this here's Rover, our command car.
Rover was a high-clearance model that looked like something out of an African safari, right down to a heavy cage around the cabin. Extra jerry cans of water and gasoline festooned the back and sides, spare tires were mounted on the front and hood, packs were tied to the cage, and up top a pair of radio antenna bent from the rear bumpers and were tied forward like scorpion tails. It had a turret ring, empty for now.
Automatic grenade launcher and 2 bins of grenades in the bay. This one is Bushmaster.
The vehicle was a beautiful, rust-free, armored personnel carrier, long-bodied with a toothy grin up front thanks to heavy brush breakers. An armored cupola sat at the top and firing slits lined the side. Valentine saw canvas-covered barrels sprouting like antenna.
I'll go ahead and introduce you to our driver.
The man in the back of the APC was a thick-set homunculus. The man looked like he'd been folded and imperfectly unfolded again. Scarred, with a squint eye and an upturned mouth, his face looked as though someone had given his unformed face a vigorous stir with wooden spoon. Even his ears were uneven. A vicious-looking dog that seemed mostly Doberman sat next to him.
Wait a second. I know you, don't I?
Yes, sir. Thanks, sir. March south to Dallas. We're just ahead of your Razorbacks in column of the old 115th. I drove a rocket sled.
Hazardous duty, since the rockets had a tendency to blow up in the crew's face. Southern Command had any number of improvised artillery units. Crude rocketry was popular because the howling, crashing projectiles unnerved even the most dug-in grogs. Someone said it was because the rockets made a noise that sounded like the grog word for lightning strikes. Valentine suspected it might be the other way around, that the grog started calling lightning strikes after the sound effect from the rockets.
Dover. No, Drake. Your crew pulled my command car out of a mud hole outside Sulphur Springs.
We did, sir.
Serves me right for taking the wheel. I never was much of a driver.
Drake here is her ladyship's, well, we call him the ranch's sheriff's deputies. He keeps law and order among the hands and their families.
Yeah, not popular work, sir, but it pays well.
Quite a dog you have there. Can I pet it?
You can, sir, but I wouldn't advise it. I don't even pet him.
Fair enough. How's she drive, Drake?
Like steering a pig with handlebars shoved up its ass, but he'll get there and back.
Riot control platform, isn't it? I've seen these in Illinois.
That it is, sir.
We've got it rigged out to carry injured and comfort.
The tunnel-like inside was full of 12 folding bunks attached to the walls of the vehicle, as well as seats along the walls, cushioned lockers. The bunks blocked some of the firing slits, but not the cupola. The machine guns looked more frightening from the outside, thanks to the big barrels. Inside, they were revealed to be assault rifles rigged out with box magazines. Still, firepower is firepower.
What's up top? A broomstick?
Well, the gun's real enough. 20 millimeters of lead to turn any breathing target into dog meat, from a reaper to a legworm.
Dogs know better than to eat off a dead reaper. Hey, come on, Major Valentine. I'll show you the chuck wagon.
Next in line was a standard military truck with an armored-up cabin, a mounted machine gun at the back, and a twin-tank trailer dragging behind. The paint job and new tires made Javelin's venerable and road-worn Comanche look like the tired old army mule she was. The chuck wagon towed a trailer with two big black tanks on it. The hood was up on this one, and a plump behind wiggled as a woman in overalls inspected the engine.
Ma! There's someone needs meeting.
Busy here!
You're never that busy. Come on out of there.
God damn.
A plump, graying woman hopped down from the front bumper. She wiped her hands and gave a wave Valentine decided to interpret as friendly gesture instead of sloppy contempt.
This is Ma, one of the ranch's roving cooks. S-Southern Command and X-Logistics Commando. She's our expert on Tennessee and Kentucky.
Really only know it to the Tennessee River. But from the goat shack to church dump, I've been up and downer. My specialty was liquor, of course, but I traded in parts and guns, too.
I'll put you to work on this trip. We'll need medical supplies and...
Excuse me, sir, but I don't know medicinals. Never had much of a mind for them. Too easy to get stock shuffled or wheezed or lose it all in the old bayou flush. Easier to spot a true rifle barrel or bourbon from Busthead.
That it is.
Moving on, here we have Boneyard.
Boneyard was a military ambulance truck. It had the same basic frame as the Rover, with a longer back end and higher payload bay. A bright red cross against a white background decorated its hood and flanks.
Doc and the nurse are helping out in your hospital. The driver's name is Big Gustav, old Missouri German. My guess is he's eaten. Never was a bear as far as I know, but he's got the appetite of one.
Valentine paced back up the column and found the matriarch who dissembled all this to bring her boy home.
I'd like to congratulate you on your column, Mrs. Okun.
When we were young, my husband and I ranched right into no man's land. Hard years. Dangerous years. I knew what to bring on such an expedition.
I hope your care obtains results.
That's in God's hands, Mr. Valentine. All I can do is my best.
God usually fights on the side of the better prepared.
I don't care for your sense of humor, Mr. Valentine. But, as an experienced soldier, I suspect you've earned your cynicism.
Your son didn't serve under the name Okun, did he?
No. He didn't want to be pestered for money or jobs for relatives. He served under my maiden name, Rockaway. Sweet of him, was it not, Mr. Valentine?
Valentine made a note of that. He'd have to check the roll call records and medical lists to learn which Legworm clan ended up taking care of him. They had left only a handful of wounded behind who seemed likely to survive, and even then only in areas controlled by their allied clans.
How much do you know about Kentucky?
My sources say there are many off-road trails, thanks to the feeding habits of the Legworms. I wanted vehicles that could use poorly serviced roads and even those trails.
How'd you get vehicles like this together?
Get them? Sir, they're from our ranch. We control property that covers hundreds of square miles. That ranch couldn't function without range-capable wheels.
When Valentine had first seen Mrs. O'Coombe, he wondered if she'd hired mercenaries. They knew about moving off-road with a column of vehicles. They had plenty of tow chains and cables ready to offer assistance to the next in line or the previous. He noticed the various trucks' engines had cloth cowlings stitched and strapped over them. The cloth had an interesting sheen. Valentine suspected it was Reaper cloth from their robes.
So, Stuck, where do you ride?
Me and Longshot are the bikers.
Where's Longshot?
Up here! Scout Sniper!
Valentine looked up and saw a woman in old-fashioned bike leathers sunning herself atop the Bushmaster. She had strong Indian features, dirtied from riding her motorcycle. There was a clean pattern around where she presumably wore her goggles. You wouldn't necessarily call her pretty or beautiful. Striking was more like it, with strong features and long black hair that put Valentine's to shame.
Comanche?
Elevino! Tukum carry mutts! A little bit of everything. You?
A North Minnesota mix.
Well, pleased to meet your acquaintance.
Hey, you want to see me feed these beasts?
Stuck led Valentine over to the chuck wagon's trailer. It had big twin tanks that Valentine had assumed were powered by gasoline or diesel or vegetable oil. Longshot hopped down, and Stuck opened a latched cooler strapped on a little platform between the tanks. Two buckets rested inside.
Oh, good God, that smells like...
Valentine watched Stuck and Longshot, apparently oblivious to the odor, each lift a bucket towards one of the tanks.
Yeah, everyone pisses and shits in the old honey bucket. Food scraps are good, too, especially carbohydrates.
Stuck took a leather lanyard from around his neck. Valentine noticed a Reaper thumb on it, interesting only thanks to an overlarge pointed nail capping it. The lanyard also had two keys. He removed a plastic jug of blue-white crystals with a metal scoop sunk in from a box on the tanker trailer.
This is my job. I check the test strips and seed.
He extracted a long dipstick from the fragrant tank, wiped it on a piece of paper about the size of a Band-Aid, carefully placed the test paper in a clip, and held it up to a color-coded plasticized sheet. Nodding, he made a notation on a clipboard that rested on the box's hinged cover.
The Kurians guard this stuff like the Reaper cloth factories.
I've seen those factories. One of them, anyway, in the Southwest.
Takes about 36 hours to do 350 gallons. In a pinch, these engines can run off kerosene, regular diesel, or even waste cooking oil. But this stuff's easier on them. And Habby doesn't bitch about changing gunked-up fuel filters.
So where do you get that stuff?
The Great Dame is friends with some big bug in Santa Fe. He's playing both sides of the border, scared there'll be a reckoning if Denver Freehold and Southern Command pair up and hit the Southwest. He's a honcho in transport. Keeps trying to propose, but she shoots him down.
What's your story, Stuck?
I never was cut out for the military life, even as a bear. Hurry up and wait, hurry up and wait. That drove me crazy. Stand here, look there, turn your head and cough, bend over, pull them apart. That's not my lifestyle at all. Mrs. O'Coombe, she keeps me busy out in the open where I'm alone, riding from post to post, checking security. No one to piss me off that way. Hey, Longshot, what do you think of this color?
More water.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Thanks.
As she turned around, Longshot bumped into Valentine. Valentine found himself looking into the reversed raccoon eyes of the girl. The face mask had left an odd pattern on her features. Dusky and dark, she reminded him a little of Melita, save that Longshot was a good deal shorter.
You must love your bike.
I was out scouting east of here this morning.
Longshot gets bored easily. She's a retired gorilla from down Mexico way. Met her during Operation Snakebite. She's ridden to my side ever since.
Full partnership or limited liability?
Nah. Reaper yanked my gear off when I was captured in 66. Didn't hurt as much as you'd think, but about all she does is keep me warm.
Valentine had a hard decision to make, and after consulting Lambert, he presented it to Mrs. O'Coombe the night before their scheduled departure.
I'm afraid I'll have to commandeer your doctor for Fort Sing, Mrs. O'Coombe. Our remaining doctor is exhausted. He's worked 7 days a week for over a month now.
And just who do you suggest will look after my son or any wounded we recover?
We'll take our nurse. If they've lived this long, I doubt they'll need any more care than that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Valentine, but this is one time I must tell you no. I don't like the idea of traveling with wounded without a doctor.
A nurse should be sufficient for travel.
Valentine had made his decision, and that was that. He had rank, after all, and it would take months for Mrs. Okum to get her friends to exert their influence for or against him. And by then, he hoped to have her son back. Valentine passed the word and names for an officer's call, and then arranged for food to be sent up to what was now being called the map room. Next to the communications center, it had formerly been a game room. Lambert had altered it so it featured everything from a large-scale map of Kentucky to an updated map of the Evansville area, river charts, and even a globe Lambert had colored with crayons to reflect resistance hotspots against the Kurian Order. Lambert was a whirlwind. Somebody had a screw loose if they had just cast this woman aside as part of a political house cleaning. Gamecock was there representing his bears, Frat for the wolves, and Duvalier just because she saw the others gathering and wanted to grab a comfortable armchair. Patel was present, of course, and Colonel Bloom's new executive officer, a guard lieutenant who distinguished himself at the bridge where Bloom had been wounded on Javelin's retreat.
You looking forward to your trip, Major Valentine?
We won't be touring. I don't care how well-equipped and crude she is. If she's recovering Southern Command forces, we need Southern Command along. I think she's sailing into trouble.
Isn't she a bit old for you, Val?
Can come along and keep an eye on me, Smoke.
No walking, I hope. Ice back and forth across the state is enough for me.
Who would you like to bring, sir?
I'd like to take 2 bears, Chieftain and Silvertip, 4 wolves, and a nurse.
Who's bringing the beer and barbecue?
Do I have to remind you that this is an officer's call, Captain?
Then I'll join the tour.
Call it a survey, call it a reconnaissance in force, call it a recovery operation. Call it anything you like. It's my intent to have a mobile force of some strength who knows how to deal with Reapers. With the Legworm clans in camp for the winter, there'll be so many sitting ducks for whatever vengeance Missionary Donut is talking about.
Goodwill tour it is. Our friend up front has never made much sense. Seeing some Southern Command forces in Kentucky's heartland will do the cause some good in any case. And let's not forget our outgoing president's letter.
Can I go with my wolves, sir? I'd like to see a little more of Kentucky.
I'll be glad to have you along, Lieutenant Frat. Thanks for volunteering. You'll save me a lot of legwork.
A terrible sense of death stood over Valentine's pillow as he awoke. The Valentingle. He hadn't called it that at first. If he thought about it, he might have remembered that he once called it the Willies or the Creeps. The name came from his companions in the Wolves, who'd learned to trust his judgment about when they were safe to take refuge for the night, what hamlets might be visited quietly, whispering to the inhabitants through back porch screens. Whether it was sixth sense, the kind of natural instinct that makes a rabbit freeze when a hawk's shadow passes overhead, or some strange gift of the Life Weavers, Valentine couldn't say. But he did trust it. A Reaper was prowling. Valentine slipped into his trousers and boots almost at the same time, tying them in the dark. He grabbed the pistol belt hanging on his bedpost. Next came the rifle. Finally, he slung on his sword. Oddly enough, the blade was more comforting than even the guns. There was something atavistic in having a good handle grip at the end of an implement you can wave about.
Operations.
This is Major Valentine. Any alerts?
Negative, Major Valentine.
Well, I'm calling one. Pass the word. Alert, alert, alert. I want to hear from the sentries by the time I get down there.
Roger that, Major.
The communications center lay snug in the basement. Valentine looked out the window. Emergency lights tripped on in quick succession. They were perhaps not as bright as Southern Command's sodium lights that illuminated woods on the other side of the parking lot, but they had precise coverage that left no concealing shadows on the concentric rings of decorative patio stones. The old estate house had quite a security system. A shadow whipped across the lawn, bounding like a decidedly unjolly black giant, covering 3 meters at a stride, a dark cloak flapping like wings.
Reaper.
Could it be their old friend from the Ohio? The clothing was different, it seemed. The other one hadn't even had a cloak or cowl when he'd last seen it, and it seemed doubtful that a wild Reaper could attain one. Valentine swung his legs out and sat briefly on the sill like a child working up the nerve to jump, rifle heavy across his thighs. Valentine had no need to nerve himself, but he did want one last look at the Reaper's track from the advantage of height. Would it angle toward the soldiers' tents or the munitions dugout? Kurians had been known to sacrifice a Reaper if it meant blowing up half a base. It did neither. It headed straight for the woods, south, toward the river. Valentine landed on his good leg, cradling the rifle carefully against his midsection as though it were a baby. With that, he was off, settling into his old wolf lope, the bad leg giving him the port and starboard sway of a tipsy sailor, or perhaps an off-balance metronome. He cast about with a coonhound's frantic anxiety at the edge of the woods. The tracks were there, hard to see in the deep night of the woods. Only the Reaper's furious pace allowed him to find the tracks at all. No sign of the Reaper. Deciding on handiness over firepower, Valentine slung his rifle. Drawing his pistol and sword, he tucked the blade under his arm. He held the pistol in a solid two-handed teacup grip, searching more with his ears than his eyes. Valentine swung, the red fluorescent dot on the pistol's foresight tracking through wooded night to a raccoon, blinking at him from a tree branch. Valentine lowered the pistol barrel. A half hour later, he traced the tracks to an old road running along the bank of the Ohio River above the flood line. The Reaper could have continued onto the river or headed down the road in either direction. It might even have stashed a bicycle somewhere. A Reaper could reach a fantastic speed on two wheels. Now all that was left was the grim accounting. Perhaps the Reaper had grabbed some poor sentry and terrified him into giving an estimate of their reduced strength once Bloom had departed. There'd be a name to report missing and fear in the camp. Such a loss would be worse to take than an ambush or a firefight, where at least the men could feel like they shot back. A single man's death, after so many weeks without a casualty worse than a broken ankle, would loom all the larger over dinner conversation. It took 3 hours for word to come back to the alarmed operations center. All in-fort personnel present and accounted for, from the most distant sentry to the cook stocking potatoes in one of the basements against the winter. One other person had caught a good look at the Reaper, and Valentine and Lambert heard the story from a shaken-up mechanic named Cleland, brought in by Frat, who'd found him crouched on the unpleasant side of a board over a pit toilet and helped him out. Cleland was up late winterproofing a pump, went to the cookhouse for a hot sandwich and coffee, and saw a tall figure standing silhouetted against one of the security lights.
Just looked like he was trying to keep warm, wrapped up. Didn't notice how tall he was right off as I was heading up the hill, you know.
Standing in the light.
Turned toward it more like. I saw something in his hand.
He needed light. It's a dark night.
Could you see what it was, Cleland?
Piece of paper, maybe. It shoved whatever it was into its cloak when it heard me. Damn thing looked right at me. Yellow eyes. Nobody ever told me how bright they were. A man doesn't forget that. Don't think I ever will.
What then?
I ran like the devil. Or like the devil was after me, more like. Dodged through the transport lot and jumped into the old latrine.
You can go, Cleland. Get a drink if you like at the hospital. Medicinal bourbon.
Thank you, Colonel Lambert.
What do you think, Val?
Found a garbage can overturned by the cookhouse. Could be raccoons again.
A Reaper snuck onto the base to go through our garbage? Not even the garbage at headquarters, a can full of greasy wax paper and coffee grounds?
Valentine had the same uncomfortable feeling he'd had on his first trip into the Kurian zone, when he'd learned that one of his charges had been leaving information for Kurian trackers.
A message drop.
Possibly. People go to the canteen at all hours. It's a good spot. Almost everyone's there once a day.
That means it could be anyone.
In a camp full of quislings.
Not anymore. At least I hope not.
They turned on their superiors once. We have to consider the possibility that they'll do it again. How many of them are above going for a brass ring in an estate in Iowa?
Valentine passed through Mrs. O'Coombe's mini-camp the next afternoon.
Will you take tea with me, Mr. Valentine? You look chilled.
Valentine had no need to be anywhere. The column was waiting for a report from the Kentuckians about the status of their wounded left behind, not to mention official permission to move through the new freehold with an armed column.
Yes, I would like to talk to you.
Tea elevates any social interaction.
Mrs. O'Coombe placed an elegant copper pot on the electrical camp stove connected to her generator. Valentine admired the long spout and handle. The decorative top had elaborate etching.
You'll forgive me. I make some ceremony of this. Tea time was always my time on the ranch. Even my husband, God rest him, didn't disturb me if I closed my library door.
Smells good.
Tea is the smell of civilization. Are you a fan of it, Mr. Valentine?
I used to drink some good stuff in New Orleans. Lots of trade there. I had sage tea in Texas. I trade my whiskey and tobacco rations for tea. The Southern Command stuff.
Dusty mud. These are real leaves from China and India. It's not a strong smell, but then civilization isn't a strong presence either. The whole idea is the sublimation of coarser practices. Yet, when it disappears, just as when your cup is empty, you'll notice its absence more. Receiving mail is an ordinary experience until it doesn't show up for a week. Then its interruption is keenly felt.
We'd like nothing better than weekly mail out here.
How is the bond tour going, Mr. Valentine?
Poorly, I'm afraid. These Kentuckians keep their gold close. We've had some donations of whiskey, boots, and craft goods that we might be able to trade for butter and eggs if we come across a farm wife in a patriotic mood. You'll see that on the road.
I am anxious to get started. I wish to see my son again.
You know, there's a chance we may never find Corporal Okum.
I've prepared myself for that eventuality, Mr. Valentine.
You seem like a woman used to getting her way. I hope we'll be able to complete our sweep and bring back a few more of Southern Command's own.
My staff and their vehicles are entirely at your disposal, sir. Our agreement still stands. I am allowed to search for my son. You are allowed to bring back any you have left behind. If we cannot find news of my son, all I ask is a finding that he's been killed in action so that his memory may be honored accordingly.
Valentine would be glad to have Mrs. Okum's crew out of his graying hair. Her precious doctor was always asking for better water, more sanitizer, more hands to pick up shifts, changing bandages and bedding. In the end, it was decided that Mrs. Okum's doctor would come along after all, but only after the remaining Javelin doctor personally spoke to Valentine and explained that having a doctor along might mean the difference between a continued recovery and a setback as they moved the wounded. Valentine wondered how much of a specialist Mrs. Okum's doctor really was. He went by the unimaginative moniker of Doc and seemed more like a country sawbones than an expert in difficult recoveries, though his nurse, a thick-fingered Louisiana-born woman named Sahita, had the serene, slightly blank look of an experienced caregiver. Sahita looked at the entire world through narrowed eyes and seemed naturally immune to chit-chat, responding only in monosyllables, if at all possible, to any conversational efforts. Valentine and Frat did a final inspection before boarding the vehicles. Food, clothing, gear, guns, everyone a first aid kit, everyone a tool for finding food or making shelter. Frat had a big shoulder bag over his arm as well, stuffed with maps and battered old guidebooks to Kentucky. Valentine was rather touched by the imitation, if that's what it was, rather than coincidence. Though Frat had avoided choosing a diaper bag for his miscellany. Despite his misgivings, Valentine was relieved to be on the move at last. The sooner they started, the sooner he could return. The motorcycles led the pack, followed by Rover, with Valentine riding shotgun and Mrs. Okum in back, looking for all the world like an annoying mother-in-law in a comedy of the previous century. Duvalier slumped next to her, head pillowed on her rolled-up overcoat, already settling in to sleep. B had reluctantly taken a place in the Bushmaster behind, but soon amused herself by unloading magazines, cleaning the bullets, and reloading the magazines. The rest of the camouflage-painted parade followed. Valentine had a big, comfortable seat, and there was a clip for his rifle in the dashboard. A clever little map of reading light could be bent down from the ceiling, and there was even a little case in the seat for a pair of binoculars, or maps, or sandwiches, or books, or whatever else you might desire on a long trip. The old world sure put a lot of thought into conveniences, Valentine thought ironically. Of course, a new universal churchman would counter that the conveniences applied to only one half of 1% of the world's population. Habanero, the wagon master, controlled the wheel and gear shift in Rover, his earpiece in and a little control pad on his thigh that allowed him to radio to the other drivers. He gave Valentine an extension so he could plug in to listen and to speak if he had to. In the cabin of Rover, Valentine felt his usual isolation from the outside world when riding in a vehicle. While he enjoyed the comfort and convenience, he lost much of the appreciation of landscape and distance, proper humility before wind and weather. Of course, he couldn't overlook the advantages an engine and wheels gave you when you had 200 miles to cover in search of your scattered wounded.
Slow here. I'd like to have a word with a vendor up here. Need to install a drive-up window.
Why, Xavier? Oh, it's you, my brother and friend. I'm glad you've decided to bow to the inevitable. But time runs short. Hurry! Go like Lot and his wife, and do not look back.
Sorry to disappoint. We're not leaving. We're just off to do a little touring. Would you recommend the Corvette Museum in Bowling Green or the Lincoln Birthplace?
I weep for you. You're all dead, you know. A reckoning is coming. Weeds have sprouted in Kentucky's green gardens, and it is time for the gardeners to replant. But first, the scythes and the cutters. Scythes and cutters, I say.
They better be sharper than you. It's a sad day when...
Wait a moment. What's this about you? What scythes? What cutters? I don't believe in visions unless they're specific.
Oh, it's coming, sir. Sooner than anyone expects. You have one final chance to repent. Turn west and follow the sun. If you turn east, by your actions is Kentucky doomed. You sow the seeds of your own destruction.
And how does a man like you come by such intelligence?
I prayed and I learned over many long years. But I too had faults, pride and greed and lust. I was cast out to make my way among the heathen. But they did not take all my gifts. I still have my vision.
False prophecy. I've seen no portents. Red sunsets before the Kurians ever move, my mother always told me. Long red sunsets and dawns, with blood on the clouds.
Whispers on the wind, you poor soul. That's how I know. Whispers on the wind.
Would that the wind were a little clearer.
I hear voices, you poor lost soul. See visions, visions! Oh, they break the heart.
I'm sorry you're so burdened. How long have you carried that cross?
Had them since I was little. Born in a church hall. The New England Archon's own retreat it was. But a grim place and nothing but lessons from the time I took my first step. That's no way to serve the gods. No, sir. Not for me. I ran away as soon as I could climb over the wall and never looked back. Took up with some relief and reassurance workers and then signed up for the missions. First in group and then alone and with only faith in my poor wit. Wanted souls away from folly and death ever since.
How long before our day of judgment? I'd like to make some preparations. Will, disposition of assets, and so forth.
That I can't tell you. Soon, though, sir. Soon. This will be a cruel winter, and many won't live to see the spring. I say again, repent now and leave Kentucky.
All right, Habanero. Let's roll out.
Repent! Repent!
Why would you let that thing carry on so, Mr. Valentine? It insults every faculty of taste and reason.
Men like his donuts. In this case, it wasn't worth the conversation.
I heard a little of him on the way in. I wouldn't give one of his clots of dough to one of my dogs. Sugar and lard. Mark my words, Mr. Valentine. He's trying to clog their arteries or give your men diabetes. Now tell me, should we turn east immediately, or should we go south and pick up the old parkway?
Winter is the quietest time of the year in Kentucky. The locals retreat to the hearth and their livestock to barns, or to great intertwined piles, in the case of the legworms, and the frequent rains and occasional snow accumulation keep people close to home, unless emergency forces them to travel. It is a time for neighbors and small towns to get together and enjoy the indoor pursuits of the season. The final steps in the canning and preserving of the harvest, pursuit of courtship or friendship, sewing circles, and hand-tool swap meets. The column was sped on its way east by two factors. First, they did not have to forage for food or fuel, though where it was available, they were able to buy more with Mrs. Okum's gold. Second, the Kurian Order no longer existed outside Louisville, Lexington, or the Cross River suburbs of Cincinnati, none of which the column was interested in visiting. There were no checkpoints to route around, unwatched fords to find, or patrols to look out for. The only thing their motorcycle scouts had to do was report the condition of the roads or cuts or trails ahead. Valentine, always willing to see a glass half empty when anything having to do with the Kurian Order was being discussed, maintained that the ease on the eastbound leg would just mean that much more difficulty on the westbound. Luckily, he couldn't imagine just how right he was. Lambert had sent word to the clans, through Brother Mark, of the proposed route tracing the retreat of Javelin, with instructions that any of Southern Command's surviving wounded be made ready for travel and certain frequencies be scanned for radio contact. They hadn't left many behind, at least many who were expected to live more than a day or two. Valentine doubted they'd need half the bed space that had been allocated in the Bushmaster. Either the soldiers would be recovered enough now to sit, or they'd be beyond medical attention. Once in the Nolan and Green River valleys, they picked up three of their wounded who'd escaped death by their wounds, secondary diseases, or the vengeful moondaggers who'd followed in Javelin's wake. The soldiers they picked up, eager to thank Valentine for their collection, were introduced to Mrs. O'Coombe, the true sponsor of their deliverance. Valentine decided he liked her a little better when he saw her attend to the soldiers they were accumulating. It wasn't an act for the benefit of anyone, especially Valentine, who seemed to have as natural a knack for aggravating her as a piece of steel has for striking sparks when struck by a sharp piece of flint or quartz. She tended to them in a mix of Christian compassion and patriotic fervor. Nothing was too good for those who'd lost so much in the pursuit of the cause. He began to enjoy the trip. The cold weather invigorated him, if anything, and apart from delivering anecdotes about the retreat or advice on routes, he had little to do. Mrs. O'Coombe made all the strategic decisions for the column, and the mile-by-mile operations were handled by Wagon Master Habanero. Pratt was a superb scout, though Valentine was beginning to see why he was still a lieutenant. He wanted to do everything on his own. Run every risk, shoulder every burden, scout every town, be the first through every door. Valentine was impressed with his courage. Had Lahav ever said anything like that about his own eager young lieutenant out of the wilds of northern Minnesota? Of course, Lahav had brought Valentine along differently, keeping him back rather than sending him forward until he found his feet among the men and in the responsibilities of his platoon. Bee slept outside, her head pillowed on her shotgun. She'd arranged for her mane, Valentine could never decide whether brog hair should be called mane or fur, into a star to show off the wound she'd received when the Coonskins turned on the Kentucky Alliance. She was proud of her wound, issued at his side like a stamp of bravery. Valentine wondered just when whatever debt Bee decided she owed him for freeing her would be paid off. She was mysterious about her loyalty, and Valentine's rough-and-ready grog gutturals weren't up to discussions of intangibles. But Frat could hold up his end of any conversation. The boy, who'd once possessed a wary, quiet intelligence, had turned into a well-spoken man. Valentine called Frat into his tent, heard his report, and then had him sit on one of the tiny camp stools. His long legs made him look a little like a frog, ready to give a good loud croak.
What's with the big bag, son?
Saw yours and sort of admired it, sir. All these maps are a hassle.
I used to carry them rolled up in a tube.
They chatted for a while. Valentine asked about his officer's training, and they shared memories of Pine Bluff. Frat accidentally mentioned a brothel that was either new or had escaped Valentine's notice in his days as a shy, studious lieutenant. They laughed at their mutual awkwardness. Frat, for admitting that he took a trip upstairs as a rite of passage, always on the house for a hunter on his first visit, it seemed, and Valentine for living so sheltered a student life that he was unaware of its existence. Sometimes, their conversations turned serious.
You ever heard the theory that the Kurians keep the freeholds in business? That they have allies at the top of our military and government?
Well, sir, I think this might be a conversation that wouldn't stand an honor code examination.
The sir stuff only counts when we're standing up. I want your opinion. Disparaging and doubting our superiors is a fine old American tradition.
It's something men like to shout after a defeat. They cry, betrayed, and run. Makes them feel better about running away or keeping out of it to begin with. If the game's fixed, there's no sense putting any skin into it.
You've put some thought into this already.
There was the exact same argument when we got back from Kansas, all bloodied. Kind of. What's that saying? Never attribute to malevolence what can be explained by stupidity? Something like that.
I heard it as malice. Interesting that we're agreeing on that. Of course, Kerr has a few agents in the Free Republics.
be fools not to. And we're not fighting fools. Where'd you get that cry, betrayed?
Those Shelby foot books you gave me about the Civil War when I signed up.
Forgotten about that.
If you ask me, Kansas wasn't malice or stupidity. They just got lucky. The whole Moondagger army was training for a run at those grogs in Omaha. You know that.
Valentine had a lot of former friends there. Last he heard, after a big battle, the grogs had retreated up the Missouri River Valley and were now finding friends among the Nebraska ranchers he'd met when looking for the Twisted Cross with Duvalier.
Actually, I don't. I was out of the country at the time.
Kansas was bad. One of the places I was reported killed, as I recall. My platoon was ambushed and I made it away with only two men. I think the others were captured. We tried to follow and see if we can help them escape, but they were the Moondaggers, you see. Someone told me that Moondagger priests can channel aura to a Kurian just like a Reaper, and in return they get special powers just like wolves do, kind of. That's one of the reasons I volunteered to come out here, to get another crack at them.
What's left of the ones that operate in eastern Kentucky are back in the Bluegrass region, licking their wounds, last I heard, under the protection of a clan called the Coonskins, who betrayed the Kentucky Alliance. The ones who chased us across western Kentucky have been scattered. Not many survived the massacre on the road to Bowling Green. I would have liked a few officers as prisoners, personally, but the Legworm clans had women and children to avenge.
We're heading near there, right?
Yes. Corporal Okum was dropped off in the Rolling Fork Valley, southwest of Louisville. But we don't want to tangle with them or the Coonskins. Not with two motorcycles and four transport vehicles.
Isn't the size of the dog in the fight?
Why aren't you a captain, Frat?
Most of the fights I've been in since Archangel have been losing ones. In Kansas, I lost a platoon. Rio Grande was a disaster, or turned into one a long time after I left. Maybe third time's a charm. Seems to me if I'm in charge of a permanent group of wolves operating in Kentucky, I ought to be a captain at that.
You're at the damp and sticky part of the bottom of the barrel in Kentucky, you know, Frat. Southern Command has written us off.
They wrote your boys off at the top of Big Rock Hill, too. They asked me to contribute to a memorial service for you and those Razorbacks when we lost communication, when that big gun started blasting you. We got a big speech about how you bought us time and we had to make it count.
Valentine remembered the earth quaking with each fall of Crocodile's monster shells. The poor, maddened dog who had to be shot. The numbed, desperate man who wandered out into the churned earth to seek disintegration in one of the blasts.
Let's forget that for now. Here's where I'd like you to scout tomorrow.
With that, they lost themselves in operational details until it was time for Valentine to check the sentries before turning in. A clear, cold night on the banks of the Rolling Fork, with the temperature dropping enough for men to sleep curled up with a fire-warmed rock. The Valentingle came hard, so hard that Valentine thought he was ill until he recognized the familiar prickling on his scalp, the feeling that every molecule in his body was lining up to be counted. Valentine was almost nauseous with the alarm.
Alarm! Take your posts!
Valentine swung his Type 3 into his hands and put in a red-striped Quickwood magazine. A wolf rushed up to Valentine's side, shining a flashlight on himself for identification.
Major Valentine, Frat has a visitor. He's coming in with a parley.
A visitor?
It's a freak reaper with a flag of truce.
Valentine recognized what he saw prodded along by Frat, a forage bag over its head. It was taller, more spindly than most reapers, and its tightly wound apparel had tufts of fur at the edges. Great wings were folded at its side, so they stuck out behind like a pair of curved swords, and it paced with torso and head bobbing, knees reversed like a bird. He'd seen something like this before, perched on a limb, watching him load his column back onto boats after their gun raid into Kentucky. A big scallop-shaped pouch hung from its waist, loose and empty, but apart from that, it bore no weapons or other obvious gear.
Ranks only, everyone. I'll keep you blindfolded. No reason for you to look around.
It is in your nature to quiver in fear.
Well, he knows how to get things off on the right foot.
Ugh, those wings give me the loosies. I hate a bird you can't eat.
Bee brought up her big grog gun and used a tree branch to rest it on with the sights lined up on the Reaper. Valentine guessed that her gun wouldn't kill it, but it'd tear off an almighty big piece on the way through. The Reaper looked fragile. He wondered if the Kurians had built it to be proof against Quickwood and was tempted to test it. Give Bolnitz something colorful at last, gunning down an emissary under its flag of truce. Valentine looked at Mrs. O'Coombe, who had drawn herself up to her full height, hand resting on a pistol belt she'd strapped on. She nodded to Valentine.
What do you have to say?
We are, how would you understand it, an important branch of a larger tree concerning itself with affairs in North America. We of like mind are fond of you humans. Such a mix of greatness and folly, with your charming notions of assistance to those outside your name. They call us the Jack in the Box. We've done our best to research the source and are somewhat confused, for we have nothing to do with hamburgers and french fries or a winding musical toy.
Jack in the Box. Tell us your real name.
Silence, renegade! Return the brass ring you so inadvisedly carry, or we will say no more.
I earned it fairly. If you want it, try to take it.
This is one of your flags of truce.
Then speak your peace. You want to surrender to us?
I come to offer a bargain. I like the people of this land. Their independent streak, their enjoyment of hearty meals and entertainments, their work ethic, but most of all, their adaptability. From a few escaped legworms running wild, they have built an entire civilization, using them alternately as a food source and transportation and warcraft. They even use the skins of the eggs. No grog dared penetrate a legworm nest with fresh spawn wriggling about, yet they send teenagers in to snatch the material from under living scythes.
So you admire this state, so do I. But I'm not making demands of people who never did me or my kind any harm.
It is for the superior to arrange the affairs of the inferior. I only choose favorites to improve.
Leave if all you want to do is argue and waste my beauty sleep. I don't have time for this.
Quit arguing with the thing, everyone. Gets us nowhere. Let's hear it then, Jack in the Box.
That Kentucky be placed under our protection. We will not take one life from your alliance lands. Not one. No tribute. No flesh of worm or cow or goat. All we will ask is that it remain strictly neutral in the contest between civilization and progress on one side, and atavism and greed on the other.
Civilization and progress?
You only lack the experience of years, boy.
You lack the experience of who you should be calling boy.
Are we done here, Jack? You're giving your offer to the wrong people.
Mankind has always been a herd. Well, two herds. The larger of the two are the dullards, the grotty masses with their simple pursuits of sex and drink and sport. They are easy to keep and thrive with a minimum of animal husbandry. But among you, there is an elite who appreciates art and culture. It's only the passions of youth that seek the physical gratification rather than the mental that has kept your race from progressing out of its current stage. A little more selective breeding, and you would have made the leap to thought energy manipulation on your own. We will fulfill that potential. But we must have time to see it through. Give us a few more generations.
Baloney.
You've been among our better vanguards of the new Homo sapiens lux, David Valentine. Have you not seen it with your own eyes?
Valentine thought of Fran Paoli, and it made him uncomfortable. What about the officers Solon collected? Even at the time, Valentine admired them. Intelligent, energetic, committed, organized, cooperative as ants, brilliant as artists, they came so close to establishing their order in rebellious territory captured only a few months before. Yes, Valentine had admired them. How had Valentine's memory latched onto Consul Solon's team so quickly? He'd spent years in the Kurian Zone, and his more recent time with, say, Pip's Flying Circus was more pleasant to consider. Did the Kurian know what mental cards he was holding? Captain Mantia had said that one's opponents were almost too eager to give the game away. Seek the most comfortable mental path. Was the Kurian putting a few illuminated markers on that path?
We would almost take it to be universal. On the Grog's world, they became two distinct races, the Golden and the Grey, in their terms.
Eloy and Morlocks. Only you feed on both.
Does the same apply to your Dawa?
On Kerr, the weak and the stupid were consumed long ago. The most resourceful of us survived. Then we went after one another. But it provided the necessary lessons. We are all sprigs of a few hardy family trees. Tested and tested again.
Tested or twisted?
Who are you, Jack? Some Kurian who came off worse in a contest, looking for a safe place to hide?
Valentine played music in his mind as he listened, mental chaff against the Kurian exploring his mind. Childhood nursery rhymes worked well, like the one employed by the bears in the Northeast to calm themselves down. The Itsy Bitsy Spider.
Where would you put your tower?
We had in mind the Lincoln birthplace. The architecture is pleasing. The location central, yet out of the way. It would suit us.
How many us would that be?
We are the only one, for now. But if the time comes, I may have others of my kind take refuge with me. The deal would remain the same. All we ask is to be left alone and for this land to remain neutral.
Is there an or else attached?
There always is. We have intimations of what our brethren are planning. Only my intervention can stop the whirlwind that is about to sweep across this land.
This isn't for us to decide. You need to speak to the Kentuckians.
Events are not altogether in my control, either. I came to you in the hope that you would have that apostate, who goes by the name Brother Mark, persuade them into wisdom rather than folly. Our brethren are disappointed in the foolish gesture your cousins made in Owensboro. Tell your brother Mark that Gaul has been specified for Kentucky.
Get your hand out of your pocket, Jack!
Now, child. You men like to have matters set down on paper. I give you paper.
This is only for the Kentuckians to decide. It's their land.
So entertaining a discussion, we almost forgot to offer a compliment. Brilliant gambit in Owensboro. You are worthy of your name after all.
Gambit?
Yes. The bomb, blowing up some of your own. You won your goal, but the herd you stampeded is heading for a cliff. Keep your workmanship in mind in the coming days as the bodies pile up and this beautiful, rich land becomes a waste.
We'll take you along to meet the assembly.
Now, I know that trick as well. You think you'll use our avatar to locate us?
Maybe we won't give your avatar a choice.
All I have to do is to have it hold its breath. These flying forms are frail. Their hearts explode if deprived of oxygen for long. But that would be a shame. You will have no way to give an answer.
How shall we answer you, then?
We will be in touch. But if you ever wish another audience, simply tie a bedsheet on top of one of these vehicles. They will be observed. We will send a messenger.
So, the Kurian knew all about their vehicles. They hadn't seen its silhouette flying around in daylight, so it must search for them at night. Well, there were ways to hide vehicles and disperse life sign.
Be vigorous, Valentine. Do not delay even one day. We do not make empty threats. We choose the time and the place of their being carried out. The seeds of the destruction are already planted. My brethren only need to give the signal for them to sprout. You, Valentine, shall be the agent of this land's destruction. It will be your responsibility. The question is, of course, can you handle responsibility?
You talk too much, Jack in the Box. The Major's under orders, like the rest of us.
Negotiating such an arrangement, even if the Kentucky Assembly is interested, would take a lot of time. This whirlwind is as imminent as you claim. You'd better delay it, or you'll find yourself taking refuge in a wasteland.
Keep in touch.
Valentine nodded to Frat, who gave it a vigorous turn.
Habanero, see if you can raise Fort Sing on your radio. We need to find out where Brother Mark is. Mrs. Okum, I'm sorry, but the needs of Southern Command in Kentucky will have to delay finding your son.
But you said tomorrow we will be in the territory where he'd been left.
We'll get there. Just not tomorrow.
Mr. Valentine, I equipped this convoy with the best communications equipment I could find. The transmitter alone is worth one of my barns and its resident livestock. Are you telling me it is not adequate to pass along a message that may or may not be an empty threat?
Brother Mark may need transport to whatever responsible parties can decide what to do about this.
Are you giving me an order?
If I have to.
Valentine was careful to keep his rifle under his arm as the camp began to line up behind their respective leaders. The bears and wolves with Valentine, the drivers and mechanics and security men and medical staff with Mrs. Okum. Stuck just stood up and stared at Valentine.
Cool off, all of you. I don't know who or where this Jack in the off is, but we start throwing down on one another, he'll be laughing until the robins come back.
Mayor Valentine, I have Fort Sing, 5-5.
Tell him to get Colonel Lambert on the line. Wake her up if they have to. We need to talk.
You never knew how much of a Kurian threat was illusion and how much was steel. They were like magicians, always diverting attention from the operating hand. Valentine examined the sheet of paper the Flying Reaper had brought. The offer itself took up only one paragraph. There was no signature or date. The paper had a watermark that looked vaguely like a stylized depiction of an eclipse, a ring of faintly red fire, offering just enough of a glow to read the letters in darkness. Perhaps that was the Kurian's version of a commitment. A fair offer of a secure future, it began, and went on to outline the same deal the Reaper had spoken of. Autonomy for Kentucky, save for the Kurian bridgehead at Louisville, a fair exchange for Evansville, provided it remained neutral in the war. Frat returned, looking thoughtful, and stowed his rifle and gear. Valentine waved him over to the radio, where he was waiting to see if Lambert could make contact with Brother Mark. Then perhaps he and the old churchman could have personal communication. The lieutenant looked like he'd aged a year since Valentine had last seen him. Had the Kurian figured out a way to siphon off a little aura? He'd decided some time ago that that was what had happened to him at the Owensboro Western Bridge.
How'd that thing ever find you, Fred? Did it just flap down?
I thought I heard an engine. Aircraft, maybe. I went up a hill so I could find a better listening spot. It gave a chittering sound from a tree above. I looked up and there it was. I thought my number was up. But it had a white hand towel in each mitt and waved them.
You shouldn't go poking around alone.
What? Some good old boys around here will bend me over and make me squeal?
That's a dream date compared to what a Reaper might do to you.
I'll keep that in mind, Major.
Did it have anything else in its pockets besides those papers?
I searched it. Nothing but dog hair and stank. Maybe some toy poodle got packed as its lunch.
Didn't seem like the kind of creature that could fly far to me.
Maybe the engine noise was from an aircraft dropping the thing off.
We had a little disagreement over the management of the column while you were gone. We're gonna go get Brother Mark.
Before we get Mrs. Okum's son? Hope you know what you're doing. She seems like a useful woman to know if you ever decide to turn civilian and take up private employment.